This is the Precipito Man podcast, presented by Adventures of Precipito
Man. Yo!
Hello.
Welcome to the Precipito Man podcast. This is number 8 of the Slept On Classics series with your boy Coopsy.
And Bernard James.
Bernard James.
On the microphone.
He's also here on the microphone. We are using this podcast to talk about albums that we like and have enjoyed over the years, and kind of revisiting albums that we might not immediately think of when we think of an artist. Invariably, within the conversations, we talk about other albums that those artists have put out. And this week, Bernard James, do you want to reveal what we're doing, even though it's on the text of the podcast, so most people will know it already, but it's just nice to build it up. I'll carry on talking until I get the impression that you're ready to reveal what the album is. It's going to bring the tension to an end.
We're going to do Copper Gone by Sage Francis.
Boom.
People are like, why aren't you doing personal journals? Yeah. Why aren't you doing A Healthy Distrust?
Oh, such good albums.
Well, and it's a really good question.
It is a good question. But what's really interesting about that is that when you said this album, I was like, yeah, let's do Copper Gone. I'd completely forgotten where it was in the order of his albums. And I, in my head, had made the assumption that it was an early album akin to Personal Journals. The first thing I said was, I don't think I really know that album very well, but that's a good excuse to listen to it through and love it. And then as I started listening to it, I got to the third song and was like, I know this one quite well. I need to check the date that it came out. And it was 2014, at which point then I was like, well, maybe this was the last Sage Francis album before we went all Epic Beard Men, which I believe is turns out to be the case.
It is indeed, yeah. It is his last album. And it's quite a good... I mean, I don't know whether he'll do another one, or maybe he's like...
Life's changed a lot since then. I mean,
well, he's got married, hasn't he?
He's got married. Yeah.
Is he expecting a child? I don't know.
I think he might be
expecting a child.
Also, this isn't this when he was like full Vine? 100% Vine.
It was just peak Vine. There's nothing like Vine to get you sick of someone, I think.
There's
got to be a ratio for gold. He did some brilliant stuff on Vine that really made me laugh, but it was definitely a kind of... There was a ratio of like, not so good.
Kind of
hilarious.
90% him shouting penis and 10% something else that might actually be amusing. I think at the point when he went full Vine, that was the point when you and I started to doubt how much we liked his music, having loved it and been obsessed with it from, you know, the age of 20 or 21 or whatever. I think that was when I first realized, and we first had kind of discussions of how social media can ruin yourself as an artist, because you can spoil your own art. And I'm not saying that that is the case. The albums he's made, this one included, all speak for themselves. But I find I enjoy them much more when I distance his art from how he was on Vine and Twitter and all of those platforms at the time. I don't really know what he's like on them now. I would imagine he's probably calmed down a little bit, particularly as we were just talking about the amount of things that have changed in his life. But I'm pretty sure this must have been around that time that he was just doing Vine all the time.
It was actually sponsored by Vine, this album. All the songs are about 15 seconds long.
Yeah. And they've all got the word penis in them.
Short music videos.
It's a banging album.
It's a phenomenal album.
It's got, I think. You know, and it... I was annoyed with myself for kind of, it almost sounds bad, this, like bunching it in with the early stuff, as if the early stuff doesn't all have its own, you know, merit, which it does. But the fact that I couldn't remember, like, if you asked me about Buck 65 albums, I could tell you that Never Love was one of the later ones. Maybe that's because the sound is so different, whereas the sound of Copper Gone, it's still reflective of all of his other albums. It's not a world away. The one note I did make, which and we briefly discussed before we started recording, was it's not the one note I made. I made four. But one of those four notes were Beats Are Super Doomtree. And it turns out that one of the Doomtree Collective produced some of the beats on the album. Is that right?
Yeah, so Cecil Otter produced two of the tracks. And he'd produced the opening track, Pressure Cooker. And then he also produced the track Dead Man's Float. And Dead Man's Float is really cool, actually, because it's I don't know if you are a Modest Mouse fan, but around the same time when I was in uni getting into Sage Francis, someone also lent me a Modest Mouse album, and it had this song on it called Float On, and it's a huge song. Great song. If you're not aware of it, really go out, listen to it. But he references
stay
that
in
a
and
lot.
Listen to it, actually. Stay in.
Yeah,
and
stay, it. Order it online. You don't need to go out anymore.
Yeah, so, order it. Don't stream it. Buy it.
Buy it. Bootleg it.
Yeah.
So do it, that. So anyway, he references that song a lot in this song, and it's great for me because it's like double nostalgia. But just to jump back, like that, I think the whole album of Where This Comes, obviously in his catalog, it's the last one, but it feels for me, I was surprised to hear what it was like, to read that it was like 2014. But then also his album before that, Life, I think that album was the one where, now I didn't really connect to that album very much.
It was much more live instrumenty, you're right. So this I can't, is more like a revisit of his older, it's almost like he moved away from the older vibe with that album.
I'm not sure, and I'm going to be, you know, press one of those buttons for when one of us just makes stuff up. I think with Life, I really wanted to love it because Human the Death Dance, the album before that, was phenomenal. Album. And that got me into the poet, Buddy Wakefield.
Yeah.
He was fantastic. And that's when I was like, wow, I love this. This is phenomenal. And then I went down a whole kind of Buddy Wakefield fandom. If you haven't listened
to
Buddy Wakefield.
Yeah, haven't you got some of his artwork somewhere as well?
I do, yeah. I've got a signed piece of his. I went to see a show of his in a cafe. And Dean Atta was there as well, actually. It was very nice. What was that?
Just big up Dean?
Oh, yeah, big up Dean, yeah. He's got a new book out, actually, Black Flamenco. I haven't read it yet.
I think that's been out for quite a while. I don't think that's new.
Or has it?
Yeah, but it is new, his latest book. So go with that.
Go with that. Just sorry, Dean, we don't have the up-to-date information in case you're listening to this.
Latest is a key term because it doesn't timestamp anything, right? It's the latest.
The latest info now. But anyway, he was in the same room, and then I bought this this print off Buddy Wakefield, chatted to him. He was lovely, and I was just very embarrassed and awkward as usual. And anyway, so Human the Death Dance, bringing it back to Sage Francis, is great. Human the Death Dance is a lyric from, or a line from, a poem by Buddy Wakefield. So that was a phenomenal album. And then Life came out. He references, the title itself is a reference to a Sage Francis lyric, right? Life is just lie with an F in it, and death is definite.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was really excited by that, but also, and the photo I think is a younger Sage. And I think I was just quite confused by the whole project.
It looks maybe a bit like, if I remember rightly, the album cover of Life looks a bit like a dollar bill or something with him on it. Mm. I remember that album being, it's a bit like Atmosphere's When Life Gives You Lemons. There's lots of live instrumentation. It felt like a departure from what we kind of knew and kind of expected out of Sage Francis, in the same way the same thing happened for Atmosphere. And for some people that works, and I think you would definitely argue with Atmosphere that worked because you really like that album.
Yeah, I love that album.
With some artists, it doesn't work quite so well. And I think Life was a bit of a departure from what he usually did. And this was essentially kind of going back to being more beat sample based And therefore, I prefer this to life, and I know I'm pretty sure you do too.
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, this does have that. I mean, whether we're right or not, I don't know, but it certainly does. It feels like it's got the vibe of personal journals, a vibe of a healthy distrust in it as well.
It harks back to early Sage, early Aesop, kind of early everything, really. But because it's one of the latter examples of that kind of hip hop, its production values are huge. It sounds massive. You know, it sounds bigger than like Float or whatever. I know that's Aesop Rock, but still they're within that same class of what they did. I would always pitch kind of Sage Francis and Aesop Rock on similar pedestals from the start, really. They're very different, but they're also very much in a similar lane of words, craftsmanship and wordery.
You're absolutely. I mean, Sage has this, like, I think this is the album as well, but when I started re-listening to it, I was just blown away by how good his lyrics are. And they're not kind of, like, sometimes they're clever for the sake of being clever, but he's got this, but I think that there's so much more heart here. There's such a lot of heart. And I think he's got that way that he always, I think we haven't talked about it yet, but there's the lyric, why don't we get, why can't we all just get along, stick and beat the shit out of each other?
Yeah, it's been great.
He's got that way of following off. And I think that's one of his things, isn't he? He starts with a common idea, but then he flips the meaning of that last word and flips it into something else. And I, you know, it's not rocket science. I mean, nothing is it? Apart from rocket science.
Rocket science, it's not brain surgery either. But you know what? Brain surgery.
And he does that, and it's great. And it's just an awful.
Well, it's a.
I don't know what, he's a good lyricist, is what I'm trying to say.
It's a method. It's I hate to call it a gimmick, but it's a kind of trick of his.
It's a technique.
It's a technique that he has honed and developed, and he's probably one of the best at that flipping the idiom. And it's something that I've always liked to do in my lyrics, which I've got from hearing that lyric you were just talking about, because Sage Francis, that album is the album Hope by Nonprofit. That is the album that made me listen to indie rap at all. Before then, all I listened to was Snoop Dogg and Dre and Biggie and Tupac. Like, it was that album and it was Sage Francis who turned me on to indie rap, because his lyricism just blew me away.
Well, that whole album itself is phenomenal, isn't it? That's a huge love letter to hip hop. The lyrics are just laced with references to hip hop. And it's absolutely phenomenal. And I think it's one of those partnerships you wish would come around again. And actually, it's pretty brilliant, but it hasn't. In the same way you've got so your special. Felt, your Murs and Slug. Collaboration. It's happened three times. Third time, take it or leave it, really.
Yeah.
And then you had Bike for Three, the Buck 65 collaboration with, I'm going to get her name
the
wrong.
The French producer, wasn't she?
Yeah. I'm not going to get her name wrong, so I'm just not going to say it. Check that out. The first collaboration is phenomenal. And the second collaboration is really good as well. But again, you get something so special when someone hasn't revisited something. It just is what it is.
So I was just trying to look up Bike for Three to be able to tell you the name, but Google automatically filled out my search to Bike for 3 year old child, which wasn't what I was looking for. Greetings from Tuscan.
Yes. I think that was actually a MySpace collaboration.
Belgian producer, Greetings from Tuscan. I've heard some of her stuff. It's fucking great.
Yeah. It is really good. And I do think that came about as a MySpace kind of thing. I think they messaged each other on MySpace and then worked collaboratively online, produced this awesome album. And I think about 10 years later, they produced the follow-up.
Yeah, yeah.
In a similar way, I think, just kind of emailing stuff.
Well, just to clarify for the listeners, Hope is an album that Sage Francis made with a producer called Joe Beats, who did put out another album or two. He put out an instrumental album called Diverse Recourse, which I absolutely loved. I don't really know what he's done since then. I'm not sure he's still making music, or if he is, whether it's under a different guys, I don't know, but that's the album that is, you know, that's incredibly important to me personally, but I know to us, as we've just been talking about. But that was where I was exposed to Sage Francis for the first time and recognized his incredible lyricism. It was like nothing I'd heard before. And since then, he's still, as much as I've heard other MCs who are of a similar ilk, like I've just been talking about, Aesop Rock or whatever, he'll always hold a special place in my heart for that. And I think that's why this album is really important, because it's still in that vein before. And again, it's something we've kind of alluded to, but not fully addressed. There's a distinct cutoff point after this album where he basically stopped making solo records and started focusing on Epic Beard Men, which is his collaboration with B. Dolan, who also went through a very similar journey, because B. Dolan's first album, or second album, The Failure, that holds a very...
That's crazy.
Yeah, a very interesting place in my heart and memories, but something that I'll never forget. And it's not because the album isn't... And it's because the album is so phenomenal that it holds that place. But they both went through a change, a shift at around this point after this album, where they focused on Epic Beard Men, which I guess is kind of reminiscent of Run the Jewels, possibly before Run the Jewels.
I don't know if it was, because I think that there has been, and it might be the Run the Jewels effect, but there has been like more rappers kind of getting back, because doing duos. You've got Lice, which is Homeboy Sandman and Aesop Rock.
I think what I'm trying to discover the key aspect of what I was taking from Run the Jewels as being the example is that Run the Jewels, they don't take themselves too seriously. As much as they make serious songs, they fuck about. They developed this, whether they developed it, I don't know, but they are essentially the poster boys for make a rap duo that do what the fuck they want, and they can make a political statement, and then they can also do a song that's just called Fuck You or whatever they want to call it. Merry Christmas, have a fucking gun in your face or whatever it is. Like they are the poster band for being able to do that. And basically that's what Sage Francis and B. Dolan did their own version of when they did Epic. That's how I perceive it anyway. Epic Beard Men is their kind of equivalent of like tongue in cheek. We can say what the fuck we want. We will still say, make some songs that mean something, but overall our stage show is about kind of entertaining and sensationalism. And our music is just there to kind of, I don't know, it's not there for that same purpose. It's there more, not necessarily as party music, but...
But it kind of is party music, actually, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe it is.
It's certainly,
it's difference. It's very
it's certainly not as introspective as this. It's more kind of, let's just have some fun sort of thing.
I think B. Dolan's trajectory
it's a bit more swag, I suppose.
Yeah.
Kind of...
And Pete Dolan's trajectory is a bit easier to track, because actually his sound developed up until Epic Beard Men. The last two albums or EPs and projects he put out, they did have a lot more bounce, and they were much more hip-hoppy than his very early stuff. Whereas there seems to be a much more severe cut-off point for Sage Francis, where he made this album, which is delicate, dark, brooding, and beautiful. And then it's like he cut the umbilical cord, and then from then it's just, well, it's Epic Beard Men now. And there was a much more drastic change to that approach, I feel.
Yeah. And to be honest, I imagine they both have a lot more fun doing Epic Beard Men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than they do making, what is it, their own solo projects, whether it's B. Dolan's solo projects or this one. And I totally get that, because when you and I work separately, when we work together, we have a lot more fun, because you just laugh a lot more. And that's, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Epic Beard Men.
Neither am I.
I haven't found any kind of key for it yet.
I suppose I'm not a fan in that I don't actively pursue to see what they're up to next, because to me, I kind of have already made my mind up about what they're up to, which is probably unfair. Bearing in mind they are both excellent lyricists, and actually maybe them having fun, it will produce something different, but it should essentially be of the same quality. But I think this is something that you struggle with as you get older. You go to certain artists because you want to feel a certain way, or you want to remember a certain thing. you want something out of them. And, you know, this is the problem that artists have. They want most of their fans want to put them in a box and just make them make the same album over and over again, essentially. But they don't really want that, but that's what they think they want. So it's really interesting. And but listening to this album has unlocked all sorts of kind of thoughts about that to me. And it has made me think maybe I should give Epic Beard Man another go, because he is, like I say, he's probably one of the most important lyricists to me personally, because of what I was saying earlier about making that fundamental change of only listening to songs about, you know, getting money and shooting people. Because I've got to a point where I was living that life for real, you know, it's too much. And I just needed to refocus myself, you know.
So, you need to escape from that.
Yeah. The two songs I made specific comments about, actually there's three. One of them's ID Thieves, which is amazing. I'm really interested to know if that is about anyone or any specific label in particular, because it's very aggressive and outwardly, like, there's a point, I think, where he's kind of calling out someone who seems to be claiming they're independent when they're not. And it was just, they're all bangers. I mean, that's it. This album is great.
Yeah.
And I was really pleased to hear that it wasn't one of the early ones where the production is that little bit more modern, and it just means that the sounds are much more encapsulating, particularly through your headphones. It's a good one for going for a nice walk or whatever, this album is. And I find that with a lot of the hip hop we listen to, it works better on a set of headphones when you're kind of on your own in your own space. You can really get in depth and pick apart all the intricacies of the lyrics.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm just trying to... Yeah, because I don't know if... I got something different from ID Thieves, but maybe I'm pacing it wrong. But I totally stand by you in terms of saying it is a great record. It is one to put on, and it's almost that solitary thing. Like, I don't really listen to Sage Francis to have a party or to get in the mood for a party. I listen to Sage Francis to, you know, have a whiskey and think about life.
Yeah. He's earned through the quality of his music, him, Aesop Rock, and a handful of other, and for me, literally a handful of other artists, they have earned my time where I wouldn't be like, I'm going for a walk and I'm going to put this on. I would feel like I am allocating an hour to listen to this album in its entirety because it is by this person, which is this specific album. It's almost, it's beyond an album in that it warrants my full attention for the time that I'm listening to it, rather than it just being something that is on. I think there aren't many artists or albums that do that. And I wouldn't necessarily say that this album is that for me, but I can understand why it would be for someone else. The only reason this isn't is I've already got a Sage Francis album in my locker that warrants its own kind of piece of my time. But all of his albums, particularly his solo albums, possibly with the exception of Life, I would argue, could easily be that for someone, because there's a full journey there. And as much as overall the vibes in this are kind of quintessentially early Sage Francis vibes, it's quite dark, it's quite brooding, but it's beautifully poetic within its kind of mystique and darkness. There is actually quite a lot of variation when it comes to like the tracks. Cheat Codes is really interesting in that it's essentially, when I first listened to it, it was because there's a lot of 80s synth in it. From the first listen to it, I was like, oh, this is a bit synth wavy. And then I realized, no, this is like an out and out electro hip hop beat. Like, this is a proper original early 80s hip hop electro kind of jam. That's exactly, this could be on a completely different album with a completely different vibe, this beat. And he, because of how well he delivers his lyrics and how well he writes them, it makes everything fit. even though if you took away his voice from all of these songs and just played them as an instrumental, you'd think it's a fucking compilation album. They wouldn't actually really go together. It's his tone and his ability to, as a wordsmith, really laces it together.
It's an interesting thing you say that, because the tracks are, there's different producers for different tracks. Let you say, Cecil Lotta produced two. Go on to talk about Buck 65 in a second, but you're absolutely right. Like, and I think he has done throughout his career. He's always had different producers providing music for him, and it's the way that he. And I think that's really difficult to then to get a thread for an album to hold it together. Like, you've got to be really strong as a performer to make it all make sense.
I think Nas, his first album was the first mainstream example of that. Up until that point, rappers worked with a producer and they produced essentially everything with the odd exception. It is Nas's Illmatic was the first one where all the beats essentially were from different producers. And I think it takes a lyricist to really pull that off well. And Nas obviously is an incredible lyricist, and Sage Francis is too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned Buck 65. I mean, there's not an episode we do here where we don't talk about Buck 65. But he produced he produced the track Make 'Em Purr. Now this was a
banger.
It's an amazing song, and there's an amazing animation to it as well on YouTube. And I mean, when this came out, that video had me nearly in tears, just again and again and again, just rewatching it and just hooked in it. That it's the song of the album, as far as I'm concerned, and I imagine it's a lot of people's song of the album because it's so good. But the story of it is that it nearly didn't make the album. Like, I think it was made after the album was finished, and Buck 65 just kind of sent it to Sage, and there was a time when it just wasn't going to be on the album, I think. And I don't know. Google Sage talking about it, because he talks about it. It's his experience, so obviously he talks about it better than me. I know, weird, right?
The full story, like,
I can't give you the full story on that. Well, I can. So Sage was in a room, right, and he was like finishing off
that he wrote that didn't make the cut.
So, so what actually happened was Sage was having a cup of iced tea, and it's just in a room. Yeah, really good, Sage. And he was just having a sip. And he's finished this album. And Alias was there, because Alias mixed the album. And you'll know Alias from the Anticon episode we did. And Alias was like, oh, hi, Sage. Uncle Sage.
But isn't he already there?
He's there, yeah. He's in the room.
But they haven't spoken for a while then. Why is he saying hi?
Because he didn't want to interrupt him, because they're just finishing off the album process. And Uncle Sage
formal,
is like,
isn't he, Alias?
Well, yeah, but he likes to get into himself. Like, he's got his iced tea and he's just thinking about the album order, and he's got 13 songs. And Alias is like, oh, hi, Sage. This is all finished, isn't it? And Sage was like, yes, I finished my album. And then lo and behold, there's a knock at the door. Knock, knock, knock. Yeah, like that. And it's late. It's 11:30. And Uncle Sage is like, who's that? Who the devil's that? And tap, tap, tap. Yeah, there it is again.
Yeah.
And Alias says, oh, I don't know. Do you want me to get it? And Uncle Sage...
Are they in the studio?
They're in the studio, yeah.
They're in the studio. So there's no peep or window?
No, there's no windows. No. Otherwise, there'll be some scratching at the windows, I imagine.
Yeah.
But no, there's nothing. Right. And so Sage says, let's just see if it goes away. And it doesn't. So what? Tap, tap, tap. Yeah, just like that. And okay, let's go and do it. So Sage gets up, puts his tea down, walks towards the door, opens it, just ajar, just to see if it's safe. And it's Buck 65. And he opens up the door. Yeah. Oh, you can be Buck 65 in this if you want. Yeah. So he opens the door and says, oh, it's you.
Hi. I know you like me to say hi before I say anything else.
I've got this
tune. You want it?
I don't know. We were scared. We thought it was someone else.
No, don't worry, guys. Alias, you're right. Hi, by the way.
hi.
I've got this beat. You might want this finished. Is it a beat or a finished song?
It's a beat, I think. Yeah, it's a beat.
Oh, I've got this beat. You might like it. Do you want to play it?
Oh, I'm just finishing my album, actually.
Yeah, well, bye. Perfect. That's perfect timing, isn't it?
Oh, no, I finished it. Finished the album. Bye.
Alias, I've emailed you. Just bye.
All right. Yeah. So, Buck's out. He goes.
Yeah, Alias boots up the email.
Bing.
Yeah.
He's got a notification. And then he just, like, Sage doesn't want anything to do with it. So Sage is just like, no, I've just got my tease game.
Shit.
He hasn't heard it yet. And then Alias is just like, oh, come on, let's just play it just to laugh at Buck 65. So yeah. Alias
I'm Buck 65 and I'm outside and I can hear everyone laughing. It's just sad.
You're crying, yeah. Yes. And I'm Sage Francis and I'll be like, you know what, let's do a Vine. So I'm doing Vine, laughing.
Shout penis at me through the door.
And anyway, it turns out the music's really good. And
made a song.
Me, being Sage,
yeah,
ran to the door and said, Buck 65! And you're there in tears and you try and hide them.
Yeah, you just
and I was like, let's put it on the album.
And I'm like, yeah, right. Good song.
Yeah.
Good story as well.
Good story. I wasn't going to tell that story.
We should use this method more. For telling stories in the podcast.
Yeah. So that happened. So that was it. So make them purr.
Well,
but yeah, fantastic. Nearly didn't make it on the album. Did make it on the album. Really bloody good.
Also, the other song I made a note on was Over Under. The beat on that's beautiful. It's got this violin like sample, but it could have been played through live, just constantly laced through it. It's just beautiful. Like the music within this album, it does speak for itself. It would be a really make for a really interesting listen without Sage Francis on it, but with him it's just funny that happened quite a lot, didn't it,
like where you'd get instrumental albums released.
Particularly back around that time. I think that's happening a little bit more now on Spotify. People are doing that because like rap instrumentals are becoming incredibly popular for people studying and stuff. You get like millions of views of on YouTube, but also millions of follows and stuff on instrumental boom bap and stuff like that. And instrumental ambient hip hop and things like that. So I think a lot of artists are actually finding them and re-uploading the instrumentals now, because it's like a second opportunity to kind of cash in a little bit on, you know, your artwork, your pieces. I really enjoyed listening to it through. It is so densely packed lyrically, and because I was listening to it when I was out walking, I wasn't able to make enough notes to really pick apart the lyrics, but I would never be able to do it justice even if I tried.
It's kind of like when we were talking about Saul Williams. There's no point. Because you're not going to do it, because you could sit on one verse and just unpack it, and there'll be a lot of guesswork as well in there, I guess, as well.
Yeah.
So it's not worth it. It's so he's almost a lyricist, I suppose. And I think that's too conscriptive, because anyone can enjoy him. But you know, that's probably a good way to say how we're approaching it. It might be worthwhile just mentioning his record label. He's been independent, I think, forever. Like, when I say he's independent, he's signed to his own record label, Strange Famous. I think he's always been on Strange Famous and nothing else. I could be completely wrong.
I have a feeling that one of his first albums wasn't.
I've got this wrong before, you know, when I've called someone independent and they weren't. So
that's me, because I'm a sellout. So Anticon. He was on Anticon. I knew he was.
Ah, yes. I'm sure we even mentioned that in a past episode.
Yeah, we did. He's definitely been on Anticon. Former artist.
Yeah, so that was Personal Journals released on Anticon.
Yeah.
Okay. So I take it back. I know nothing.
Was he not on the Anticon episode? Was he not on one of those songs? On that album? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
God, might not have fallen in line with when he was with them, or
because Alias mixed this album, and he's obviously one of the founders of Anticon. I say obviously, I've probably got that wrong. No, I thought, interesting. I thought he was very much in line with Anticon, but maybe, I mean, because it was 2000 and early 2000s when that album was released, right? Personal Journals.
Hang on.
2006.
Anticon discography. Well, that was ages after the album that we reviewed.
Yeah, because that was late 90s, wasn't it?
That was, 1998, 1999. Yeah. So the other thing that's really interesting about Sage Francis is that as much as he doesn't really, particularly at this point in his career, and when I say this point of his career, I mean the album we're talking about here, he's not marketing himself as a rapper's rapper. He's not a rapperty rap, rap, rapper. He never really has been. But I wish I hadn't just said he never really has been, because the point of this is that he has a little bit. The genuine point I was trying to make was he did do battle rap for quite a while, and he was formidable in battle rap. And there is an incredible battle rap between him and Brother Ali, where both of them, I think they're, you know, they're either unsigned or it's pretty early on in their careers. And
Scribble Jam, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's absolutely incredible. He's a brilliant battle rapper. I reckon if he didn't create it, he's definitely one of the people who mastered the art of essentially ridiculing yourself so much so that
the whole thing that Eminem brought to light in Eight Mile, basically.
Ridiculing yourself so much that the other person doesn't have anything to hit you with. But he never really did it in a way that was as kind of cartoonish as it is in 8 Mile, where it's so blatantly obvious what he's trying to achieve. He would quite satirically take the piss out of himself and do like little dances and stuff that made himself look stupid, but he wouldn't completely desecrate himself in the way that it's done in 8 Mile. It's a bit, you know, primary in regards to that. And he was far more intelligent in the way that he did it. And he's one of the best at doing it. Particularly, what do you think of the time? Battle rap has moved on a lot now. It's very different. I mean, it's a huge scene worldwide now. And like I say, it's changed. You used to do it on a stage with beats in front of people, and now you do it in a car park with no beat in front of nobody but a camera. Cool. But
I'm doing that some tonight, actually.
So if you want to check out some brilliant battle rapping the way that I like it, check out early Sage Francis, and that one with Brother Ali sticks out in my memory. But I'm pretty sure there's one of him battling Slug and quite a few of that MCs of that era around that time.
Yeah, absolutely, and well worth checking out. I think just going back to his label though for a second, because I think it is interesting. Like he's not a lone wolf, so to speak, but he's understood. Like, and you go on his website's not changed, I don't think, for 20 years. But he has found a flock of people who have a similar vibe to him, or not even a similar vibe, but a similar ethos and vibe. And he's presented them, and it's great, you know, like that Strange Famous has developed and grown. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know all the artists on the label, and I think there's been a changing, I feel like there's been a changing roster. I don't really know, but like...
Well, Scroobius Pip was on there, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, Scroobius Pip, definitely. Meter Maid's on there. I mean, Scroobius Pip used to be on the merch desk for his gigs in the later years of the last few years when I've been to see either him or B. Dolan. I think they're fairly close. I mean, Speech Development Records, which is Scroobius Pip's record label, was the distributor, I think, for this record.
Because they did do some tracks, they did do some features, etc. But
I think it was maybe Sage on Scroobius Pip's song.
Yeah, and I think Scroobius Pip is on a remix of a Sage song at some point somewhere. They've definitely done some songs together. Mm. I know they have.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's the artists that I can definitely recommend. Obviously, Cecilotta's on there. Well, not obviously. Cecilotta is on there. No Birdsing. They're a great band.
Cast One's fucking great as well. The Monster and the Mask or something is a brilliant album. I can't exactly remember what the album's called, but I know it's a banger. Mia May, like you say.
Mia May's great. There's also a rapper called C's Mikes, and he's really good. He's kind of like, and I think if I was like in my 20s, I'd be like fanboying over him. He just seems very down to earth, but very technically good as well.
Isn't he on the Idea documentary?
Yeah, he was in that kind of crowd of people that Idea seemed to be hanging around with. Well, definitely in the documentary, as it's positioned in the documentary, like towards the end of part of his life. He's also runs the, or he's part of that, is a podcast. What's it called? They have a podcast, something like Money.
Oh, podcast. Money. The Money podcast.
Money podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. He works for Goldman Sachs. Yeah. The other artist on Strange Famous that is worth mentioning is Sleep of Old Dominion. He's cropped up on odd songs here and there that I've listened to, and fucking great rapper. It is a great label, actually, when you think about it. And I know that it's not big time, but I think that's where you can find these kind of treasures. That it doesn't, you know, it's a much smaller affair than Rhymesayers, you know, is.
Mm.
But Meter Maids are brilliant, and yeah, they know what they, you know, they find artists that deserve that home, don't they?
Yeah absolutely.
Is a ledge.
The podcast, which I haven't recommended a podcast for, is Chrome Bills. That's C's Mike's is on it,
and he's also on the Money podcast with Martin Lewis.
Yeah, if you want to get some tips about, you know, what your mortgage is up to, or
yeah,
where the best coupons are for next week's shopping, yeah, check out C's Mike's on the Money
changes
podcast.
To the furlough scheme. So
yeah,
that's he'll help you out with that.
Really valuable stuff there. Thank you, C's, for that insight. Any more?
It's a good album, that. I loved listening to it. I did.
Yeah.
I think it's been a while since I've listened to Sage. I think with certain artists, you know, when they have that place in my head, I have certain artists or certain albums. It's like, well, they deserve this space for them to be listened to. It's quite hard in your average adult everyday life to find that space to do that, to give it that time and space. So that's one thing that I really enjoy having this podcast for, because it forces that upon me to genuinely think I am going to listen to this album and listen to it properly for the amount of time it takes. So I'm really glad for that. And I think it's reignited my, you know, ongoing but underlying passion for Sage Francis. And I will be listening to Hope very soon. And this will be onto more playlists of mine, because I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, or remembered I would. I thought I'd just kind of bunch it in as a Sage Francis album, but it's better.
Really strong.
It's really strong.
Yeah, it is really strong.
In the same way that None Shall Pass fits into the Aesop Rock back catalogue. It's easy to slump in as, oh, it's one of his albums, but it's an absolutely brilliant album, and this is too. And it's not to say that the rest aren't good, but this is one of the kind of three or four examples that they stand above the rest.
Yeah, I think it's a great album.
So everyone check it out. And check out all the albums we've done on this series of Slept On Classics. Oh, what were they? I'll tell you. and obviously listen to the podcasts of where we talk about them as well. Maybe first.
It's probably more important than the albums, I'd say.
Yeah. We started off with Grandad's Nerve Tonic, which was or is by Junk Science. We then did Ipecacneat by POS, As Cruel as School Children by Gym Class Heroes. We then did the Anticon Presents kind of label sampler that we've talked about or alluded to on this podcast. We did Panorama by Brain Tax. We did Saul Williams' self-titled album. And most recently, we did Cadence Weapon's second album, After Party Babies. So that concludes season two of the Percipto Man podcast, I guess.
It does.
So check out.
Next time we'll be back with like Patreon requests and things.
Yeah, and you know, more cool shit. You may see Slept On Classics again. You may not. We'll see what the feedback is. So probably not.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, give us a shout. It's always good to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be around and you're for season three of the Percipto Man podcast and see what is in store then.
Exciting. Bernard James.
Until then, he's been Bernard James. Just thought I'd say again because I said until then while he was saying it. Yeah. That's the level of professionalism you expect from the Percipto Man podcast. You've been listening to it for like, what, two seasons, what, about 14 episodes? Got to expect that. Yeah. And I've been Coops Coopsie. So thanks very much for...
He's been Coops Coopsie.
Checking out. He's been Bernard James. Bernhard James.
He's been
James.
Coopsie.
I've been Coops and Coops Coopsie and Cooper Nut, obviously. That one actually is the most important one because if you're going to try and listen, that's what I actually am. So,
which you probably never said on his podcast.
I don't really say it. I'm not very pro marketing.
I mean, rap names are silly, aren't they?
Kind of anti marketing, really. So I wish I hadn't said it. Right. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. How do I end the recording? There.